Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor William Fink, for another installment of Christogenes and our continuing series on the book of Isaiah. Last time we discussed chapter 56. Bill, do you have any comments on chapter 56 before we continue?
Well, it's we kind of got to it a little quicker than I thought last week, and okay. I thought I'd comment on a couple of things that I don't know if I drove home appropriately last week. That the first Isaiah 56 means nobody but Israel.
Okay.
All right. The Israelites of the deportations, the put away Israelites are the stranger. They are estranged from God.
Estranged, yeah.
And
better word,
the dry tree and the eunuch.
Mm-hmm.
That they were a eunuch because Yahweh threatened that their seed would be cut off.
Right.
And Isaiah 49:20-21 sums up the story of Israel and the dispersion.
Mm-hmm.
It is the nation which is doing the talking here.
Mm-hmm.
And with Yahweh. Okay?
Yeah.
The children which thou shalt have after thou hast lost the other, the children of the dispersion, the sinners that were put off from the land, shall say again in thine ears, the place is too straight for me, give me place that I may dwell. He's talking to the nation. He's not talking to the people.
Mm-hmm.
The people are going to continue to have children.
Right.
But the nation lost its children. The nation, metaphorically, is the wife.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And yeah. and if you want to see the proof of that, back up from Isaiah 49:20-21, and you'll see that he's addressing the isles,
mm-hmm.
the land. Oh, okay? And the land lost its children.
Yeah.
Oh, okay? That and it says, then thou shalt say in thine heart, who hath begotten me thee, seeing I have lost my children and am desolate, a captive and removing to and fro. It's talking about the nation having lost its children, not
mm-hmm.
but it's not really talking about the people. So the nation becomes the eunuch. Israel said that their seed would be cut off. When your seed is cut off, you become a eunuch.
Right.
And that's both literally and metaphorically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay, but they were promised that there would be seed. They would always be a nation in
mm-hmm.
other prophecies.
Right.
So
right.
we have to imagine that, and I think that somehow this is symbolic of Philip's Ethiopian eunuch.
Okay.
Who it can actually be established that the Ethiopian eunuch was a Judean,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not apparent.
Right.
Yeah, unless you look below the surface of the story and see that the Ethiopian eunuch what was found having returned from the temple to worship. Now an Ethiopian eunuch wouldn't do that, but a Judean in Ethiopia would do that.
Right.
And it can be established that there were an entire colony of Judeans in Ethiopia.
Yes, and
from the 5th century B.C.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Now the Ethiopian eunuch was also found by Philip reading scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Now Peter establishes that he's the first one that took the gospel to non-Judeans. Which happened after Philip's Ethiopian eunuch.
Yeah, but they were still Israelites, even though.
They were Israelites of the dispersion.
Yes,
and that's the best way to correlate the eunuchs here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that it's used metaphorically of people without seed, meaning that because these people were divorced, the seed. Their offspring were accounted as nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were accounted as nothing until the reconciliation on the cross.
That's right. That's right.
Now, the dry tree. Well, Christ says at Luke 23:31, because if they do these things to the moist tree, what would they do to the dry? The dry tree are the children of Israel who are still estranged from Yahweh. And there were Ezekiel 17:22-24, I'd like to read that.
Okay.
Thus says Yahweh God, I will take of the highest branch of the high cedar, and I will set it, and will crop off from the top of his young twigs a tender one, and will plant it on a high mountain and eminent. And, mm-hmm. and that mountain can only be Zion. And the mountain in the height of Israel will I plant it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shall bring forth boughs and bear fruit, and be a goodly cedar, and under it shall dwell all fowl of every wing, and the shadow of the branches thereof they shall dwell. And all the trees of the field shall know that I am Yahweh, and have brought down the high tree, and have exalted the low tree,
yeah.
have dried up the green tree, and made the dry tree to flourish. And that's talking about Israel in the dispersion,
right.
The dry tree.
Right. Which took root and became, many, many nations in Europe, and, of course, America and New Zealand and Australia and South Africa, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. But here it's explicitly saying
mm-hmm.
that the height, the mountain and the height of Israel is the dry tree that's
yeah.
going to be made to flourish.
Right, right. Yes, very good. So that in chapter 56, I want to quote verses 3 and 6, neither let the son of the stranger, as it's translated here in the King James, this should really be, neither let the son of the estranged, because it was the Israelites who were estranged. The Israelites are not strangers.
Well, they've become strangers.
Yes.
They've been estranged. That's
estranged.
The meaning of
yes.
the word estranged.
And to be estranged means you had to be an Israelite to be an estranged
and
Israelite.
And Paul tells several of the groups he wrote his epistles to, specifically the Philippians we just saw in chapter 2 of Ephesians last week, that he called them alienated
mm-hmm.
or estranged.
Right.
That same
right.
word can be
yes.
can be termed estranged.
Right. And the word that Jesus used regarding the so-called 10 lost tribes was apolumi, meaning put away in punishment, which only applies to Israelites and to no other people. Okay. So the consistency of the covenant relationship between Yahweh and Israel does not fail ever. In the Bible, in fact, verse 4, for thus says Yahweh to the eunuchs that keep my Sabbaths. Who was keeping his Sabbaths besides Israel?
Well, right. He has to be talking
yeah.
about Israelite eunuchs.
Yeah. And choose the things that please me and take hold of my covenant.
Which is only made with Israel.
That's right. And verse 6.
And he's talking to the cutoff seed amongst the people that were deported.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the people that were deported who choose those amongst those people who choose to keep his law and his covenant
right.
in the deportation.
Right, and even in, I think it's first or second Maccabees, where the Israelites say exactly that, we will seek a far country where we will keep Yahweh's statutes that we never kept when we were in Palestine, right? That's exactly how they put it, right?
Well, right, and when we get to Isaiah 66, it proves beyond all doubt that he's talking about the Saxon people and the dispersed,
yeah,
the Cimmerians and the Saka.
Yeah, and for those listening who are new to this message, the Caucasian people are the Israelites that emerged on the north side of the Caucasus Mountains after the Israelites escaped from the Assyrians on the south side of the Caucasus Mountains. Also, verse 6 here, also the sons of the estranged that joined themselves to Yahweh to serve him and to love the name of Yahweh, to be his servants, everyone that keeps the Sabbath from polluting it and takes hold of my covenant, okay?
They but, have to be Israelites.
That's right.
If they're not Israelites and they're trying to keep the Sabbath, they are polluting it.
Right, right. And we're
that's
not
because they're not circumcised.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's right. But we're not supposed to keep the Sabbath. With non-Adamites, certainly with non-Israelites to begin with, but certainly with non-Adamites, we're supposed to avoid their company. We're not supposed to fellowship with them, okay? Chapter 57, before I do that, any more from chapter 56?
No, I just wanted to make the points about the eunuch
okay.
and the dry tree.
Very good. Okay, chapter 57, verse 1, the righteous perish, and no man lays it to heart, and that's happening today, folks, because what we're seeing is that our Adamic Israelite people are perishing under the weight of the oppressive Illuminati regime that's running not just America, but the entire Western world, which used to be a Christian world, but no longer is. It's a Islamic Jewish world now, okay? The righteous perish, and no man lays it to heart. The very, very few understand what's going on, or even consider it. They think everything is just fine. And merciful men are taken away, none considering that the righteous is taken away from the evil to come. Okay.
Well, what this is basically saying, and this is talking about Isaiah's own time, I believe,
okay,
that the Assyrians are coming into the land, and
yeah,
and it's the righteous men who are perishing.
Right.
You
right.
know, in the deportation under the Assyrian yoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that word merciful should probably read devout
okay.
and are taking away. None understanding, that the righteous is taken away is being taken away on account of the evil to come.
Mm-hmm.
And to come is added to the text there.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Sometimes when we see someone die, they're better off. It's for a good reason.
Right, right. Verse 2, he shall enter into peace. They shall rest in their beds, each one walking in his uprightness. And, of course, I mean, we could say that this was true of the Israelite European dispersion once they began establishing civilization and cities, nations, towns, agriculture, et cetera, and then there was peace actually for a long time. Okay, and the same thing was true here in America until the Civil War was an aberration. That there was peace before and after, relatively speaking. But then our enslavement began in 1913. Verse 3, but draw near here, you sons of the sorceress, the seed of the adulterer, and the whore. Okay.
Now, I have a few things to say about this, but
okay.
I'd rather wait until after verse 5.
Verse 5, okay. Against whom do you sport yourselves? Against whom make you a wide mouth and draw out the tongue? Are you not children of transgression, a seed of falsehood, inflaming yourselves with idols under every green tree, slaying the children in the valleys under the cliffs of the rocks?
Now these are very important verses.
Mm-hmm.
But first, ye sons of the sorceress, the Septuagint says lawless sons.
Okay.
Okay, not necessarily sons of the sorceress.
Okay.
And several other translations sort of agree with the Septuagint. Now, the seed of the adulterer and the whore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in the next one, in the next verse, it says a seed of falsehood. And the Septuagint says children of destruction, not children of transgression.
Mm-hmm.
A lawless seed, meaning seed conceived outside of the law.
Yeah.
The seed of an adulterer and a whore would be seed conceived outside of the law.
We're talking about race mixing. Yes.
Verse 5. The Septuagint reading agrees with the AV here, but the Hebrew doesn't have anything about idols.
Okay.
All right? And flaming yourselves with idols under every green tree. I'm sorry, the Septuagint agrees with the Masoretic text.
Okay.
The Hebrew doesn't say anything about idols.
Okay.
It says, who inflame yourselves among the oaks in the Septuagint. And I would say that this verse has little to do with idols and everything to do with sexual intercourse.
Good.
As a pagan religious rite.
Orgies in the groves, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what can be established that Baal worship was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And that became European paganism.
That's right.
And there can be no doubt, I mean, it can be proven. Now, here we see that our people were carried off into paganism by lawless children who were a seed of falsehood. If one makes himself a sinner, does that make his parents adulterers and whores? Certainly not. All right, Ezekiel 14:20 and other passages prove that even the most just men can have children with sin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, Ezekiel 14:20 says, though Noah, Daniel, and John were in it, as I live, says Yahweh, they shall deliver neither son nor daughter,
yes,
but shall deliver only their own souls by their righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
So this, if you're a sinner, that doesn't make your parents evil if you're an Israelite sinner. The only way that your parents could be evil is if they race mix. That's the only way. If you are a spurious seed,
mm-hmm.
the only way you came into being is if your parents race mixed.
Right.
And this is a very important passage to prove that it's still all about race mixing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about idol worship. It's about race mixing.
Right.
Because if you go worship idols, that does not make your parents adulterers and whores.
Right.
Your parents could have raised you a good Christian. Every jot and tittle of the law, you could become an idol worshiper. That's not a reflection on your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course the modern churches have proved these things without, worshiping idols.
Right. Well, this is all about race mixing.
Yes.
Race mixing is still explicitly condemned.
Mm-hmm.
And this proves it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Verse 6, among the smooth stones of the stream is your portion. They are your lot. Even to them have you poured a drink offering. You have offered a meat offering. Should I receive comfort in these? Again, we're talking about these, not revelations. What's the word? Revelings. These revelings in the groves. Verse 7. upon a lofty and high mountain have you set your bed. Even there went you up to offer sacrifice. Again, we're talking about these rituals under the oaks.
Well, here, and you know, I have a paper called Broken Cisterns on my website. It's in two parts, and it proves from some ancient sources and from Hosea and even some from an old commentary that idol worship and I quote Herodotus and writers like that, idol worship and fornication, sexual fertility rituals that included intercourse right there on the altar,
mm-hmm.
that they were well connected, that one meant the other.
Mm-hmm.
If you idol worship in ancient Palestine, you are having sex with strangers,
yeah.
and that often included strangers of other races in these Baal temples.
Right.
And
yeah.
And here there is a clear connection with race mixing. Sleeping with the other races makes a covenant with them,
mm-hmm.
and requires a respect for their false gods.
That's right.
And there's no way around these references here. And the lying bastards in our pulpit, that's why they have to avoid Isaiah. Because if you ask any so-called pastor what fornication is in the Old Testament, where the children of Israel are called fornicators,
mm-hmm.
and he gives the typical answer concerning idolatry.
Right.
Show him these verses and ask him how it happens in a bed.
Yeah.
Because here the word bed is mentioned several times in this passage.
Right.
So how does idolatry happen in a bed?
Well,
that was enlarged thy bed and made a covenant with them.
You take your little statues and you tuck them in the bed, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, very good. Verse 8. Behind the doors also and the posts have you set up your remembrance, for you have discovered yourself to another than me. Okay. They're worshiping other gods, that's for sure, and are gone up. You have enlarged your bed. There's the word bed again, which means you have invited other races into your bed and made you a covenant, as you just pointed out, with them. You loved their bed where you saw it. Okay? And, of course, I'm struck by the repetition of these passages here in the modern Christian Israelite world. Of course, we're talking mainly about those Israelites who don't know, those Christians who don't know they're Israelites and are practicing these fornications today as if they were okay. And
well, history's repeated itself because our people are ignorant.
That's right.
And this, you know, idolatry, Judah married the daughter of a strange god, Malachi,
mm-hmm.
2:12 or 2:14, I forget.
Yes.
Intermarrying with the other races is idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving yourself to their gods.
Yes.
Yahweh is not their god.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Verse 9. And you went to the king with ointment and did increase your perfumes and did send your messengers far off and did debase yourself even to hell.
Now let me read the Septuagint here.
Okay.
Because in the context of verses 6, 7, and 8,
yeah.
9 in the AV makes no sense.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about sleeping in beds with people of other nations.
That's right.
All right. And worshiping in groves with people of other nations.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's talking about kings and ointment and perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's up with that, and messengers or ambassadors, right? Well, the Septuagint, Isaiah 57:9 says, and thou hast multiplied thy whoredom with them.
Okay.
It's still the same context from verse 8, right?
Yeah.
And thou hast increased the number of them that are far from thee.
Okay, where did they get the word ointment from?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
And has sent ambassadors beyond thy borders, and has debased them, debased even to hell.
Okay.
So we have the word ambassadors there,
yeah.
Or emissaries or messengers, but the Masoretic Textures takes that and runs with it and makes
mm-hmm.
king's anointment out of whoredom and
right. Yeah, that's very bad. Okay.
Now, if we, okay, by sleeping with the other races, this is telling us,
mm-hmm.
we increase the number of them that are far from thee, meaning,
mm-hmm.
and I don't believe it means far in a geographical
well,
sense.
Well, we still support them, right?
Well, it means far from thee in a spiritual
mm-hmm.
and kindred sense.
Right, they're not far enough.
Right, and we've increased their numbers by accepting these people into our lands
that's
and
right.
intermixing with them. We've greatly magnified their numbers, and we've diminished our own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's why our tax burden is increasing. Well, the welfare rolls on their side are increasing. Very good. Okay, verse 10. You are wearied in the greatness of your way, yet said you not, there is no hope. You have found the life of your hand. Well, I say in general, take the average liberal who doesn't perceive that all of these liberal policies are a total failure and costing us immensely, and even leading to the silent genocide of white people, as the blacks and other races we're supporting are spitting in our faces, killing us and raping our women and destroying our civilization. And the liberals among us seem to think, well, we got to try this some more. we haven't tried hard enough to debase ourselves, right?
And that's why I'd like to quote from the NAS, and I have a few of these passages are much clearer in the NAS. In fact, most of Isaiah is much clearer in the NAS, even though it's still based on a Masoretic text and it still has some problems.
Yeah.
Isaiah 57:10 says, "You were tired out by the length of your road," or as the King James has, "the greatness of thy way. Yet you did not say, it is hopeless. You found renewed strength, therefore you did not faint."
Yes.
And that can only be talking about the Israel of the dispersion.
Yes. Guest 7 says, so by sleeping with the other races is like getting bit by a vampire or a zombie. Well, yeah, that's a good simile. Once you did, there is no going. Well, I wouldn't say there's no going back, because in Ezra and Nehemiah, the menfolk were counseled to get rid of their mixed race offspring and their mixed wives.
Well, right, and even Paul says that there's repentance from fornication.
Right.
However, there's nothing for the children. They have to be put away, in Ezra and Nehemiah. They
exactly.
Have to be put out.
Exactly. So, there is still forgiveness, but it's better never to do it in the first place. It's one of the worst crimes, because that type of crime destroys our civilization. It destroys our people. Okay, verse 10, let me read it again. You are wearied in the greatness of your way, yet said you not, there is no hope. You have found the life of your hand. Therefore, you were not grieved. And, of course, some of our politicians, in fact, most of our politicians prosper off the transfer of payments agreements, legislation, all of this communistic legislation we've had going on since the 1960s. And they are prospering, The contractors that service the government, that carry out all of these transfer payments, et cetera, and the bureaucrats, they are prospering. But the American people who have to pay the taxes are suffering, folks. We are suffering. That's why we have the Tea Parties emerging, et cetera, et cetera. Verse 11, and of whom you have been afraid or feared that you have lied and have not remembered me nor laid it to your heart. Have I not held my peace even of old? And you fear me not, okay? No, we don't regard him. We ignore him, and therefore we don't fear him. Verse 12, I will declare your righteousness and your works, for they shall not profit you, okay?
In the NAS, it's but they will not profit
but
you.
But they will not, okay.
In other words, for our own righteousness and deeds, we won't be profited. Because he's told us that he will save us.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot save ourselves.
Okay. Verse 13.
Yeah, you can't lead a life of sin and do two sacraments and be saved.
Right.
Sure
we can.
Well, without his mercy, there's no salvation. That's
the basis
point.
Of Catholicism. You go to church on Sunday, drop a few shekels in the basket, say your Hail Marys, and you're done, right? You're forgiven, right? Verse 13. When you cry, let your companies deliver you, but the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them. But he that puts his trust in me shall possess the land and shall inherit my holy mountain. Praise Yahweh. Verse 14. And shall say, cast you up, prepare the way, take up the stumbling block out of the way of my people. Well, what is the stumbling block here, Bill? What is the major stumbling block for our people?
Well, here the stumbling block, I believe, is the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we just couldn't follow it.
Right. Our failure to obey the law or to practice it hypocritically, and the fact is most hypocrites don't admit that they're not obeying the law, They pretend to be obeying it and act righteous and, just like the Pharisees walking around all proud, etc., when in fact they are hedging. They're not fully obeying the law, and they're cheating. Of course, nobody knows it.
And I believe that's the reason for Christ, for the prophecies, in Christ's statements that he would be the stumbling block.
Okay, yes. Very good. Verse 15, "For thus says the high and lofty one that inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." Of course, if we don't have any repentance in our hearts, it ain't going to happen for us, folks.
Well, right, but after you carted off from your homeland and resettled somewhere else and removed of all of your best possessions,
right,
it's easy to be humble.
That's right. if we don't humble ourselves, we get humiliated. That's the way it works, folks. Verse 16, "For I will not contend forever. I will run out of patience with you, my people Israel. Neither will I be always angry, for the spirit should fail before me, and the soul which I have made." Okay, that also sounds like a bad translation.
Well, this is important. I'm going to read from the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay.
That was my favorite. Out of the four or five versions I have handy, that was my favorite one.
Okay.
The Dead Sea Scrolls by Abeg, Flint, and Ulrich. "For I will not accuse forever." And in other words, the children of Israel were accused of idolatry by Yahweh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. "Nor will I always be angry." In other words, his anger would be abated.
Yes.
"For then," in other words, if I remain angry,
yes,
"the spirit would grow faint before me."
Oh, okay. That
the souls that I have created. In other words, these children of Israel, they bear the vessels of the Lord, as we saw in Isaiah 52, I think it was, that they carry those spirits that Yahweh bestowed upon Adam.
Right.
He doesn't want them growing faint before him,
so he
won't be angry with them forever.
Mm-hmm.
This sets apart the children of Israel as their souls, their spirits are created by Yahweh from the other races and the other peoples.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, verse 17. "For the iniquity of his covetousness was I angry and smote him. I hid myself and was angry, and he went on frowardly in the way of his heart." Okay, of course, we're talking about the idolatry / paganism that our people still took with them in their hearts. Okay, verse 18, "I have seen his ways and will heal him. I will lead him also and restore comforts to him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips, peace, peace to him that is far off and to him that is near, says Yahweh, and I will heal him." Okay, and the him that far off would be the dispersed Israelites. The him that is near would be the house of Judah. Verse 20, "But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt." Boy, the water's casting up mire and dirt today, right? In the Gulf of Mexico. Verse 21, "There is no peace, says my God, to the wicked." Amen.
And this is absolutely contrary to the churchianity message of today.
Yes.
Now, if Israel collectively is the subject of verse 17, "I have smote him," then Israel is also the subject of verse 18, "I will heal him."
Right.
And therefore, Israel cannot be reckoned here as being among the wicked.
Right. Yeah. Okay, are you talking about verse 21?
Well, there's no peace to the wicked.
Yeah, well, I wonder. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and it behooves our people, therefore, to leave wickedness behind, okay? Chapter 58, verse 1, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression." Wait a minute. We're all saved. What transgression? You know, we were saved at the cross. It's all done. It's over and done with. We're just waiting, for the last day, and we're going to be raptured before the last day and watch all the unbelievers suffer. All we have to do is believe, and we're saved, right? Isn't that what the modern churches teach? And the house, okay, let me start from the top here. "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression. And the churches are absolutely not doing that anymore. And the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. There were good days in our past. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to Elohim. And, of course, there's always been a remnant that has been following the law. Verse 3, why have we fasted, say they, and you see not? Why have we afflicted our soul and you take no knowledge? Behold, the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exact all you labors. What's the
sentence? Read 4, and I'll read it from the NAS, because
okay.
That's what I have here in my notes.
Okay. Behold, you fast for strife and debate and to smite with the fist of wickedness. You shall not fast as you do this day to make your voice to be heard on high. Okay, what are you?
The Septuagint and the NAS are both a lot clearer here. I have the NAS.
Okay.
Well, why have we fasted and you did not see? Why have we humbled ourselves and you did not notice? Behold, on the day, and this is Yahweh answering,
mm-hmm.
Behold, on the day of your fast, you find your desire and drive hard all your workers.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that they are fasting with pretentiousness.
Okay.
And they're making their employees still work, right?
Right.
And they're holy, right?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Behold,
yeah.
And this is verse 4, behold, you fast for contention and strife,
mm-hmm.
and to strike with a wicked fist. In other words, I'm the one that's pious.
Right.
You do not fast like you do today, meaning in the dispersion,
mm-hmm.
to make your voice heard on high, which intones that their fasts in the captivity were sincere.
Okay.
While their fasts, while they were back in Israel in good times, sitting in Samaria in their homes with their estates, those fasts were not sincere.
Right.
And such hypocrisy has always been a problem with our people.
Sure.
I mean, just you see somebody that never prays, that never talks about God, that has no God in their life, and there's a car accident in their family.
Right.
Or there's an illness in their family.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're full of prayer and appeals to God.
Right. Yeah. They're Christians whenever there's hard times.
Right.
Right, exactly. All right, verse 5. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man? Of course, this type of hypocrisy is reminiscent of the Pharisees, and many of the Pharisees were, in fact, Israelites that had joined
Absolutely.
The Edomites. Yeah. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast and an acceptable day of Yahweh? Of course, again, and the major criticism as far as the Pharisees in public that Yahshua had of them was that they simply do it to be seen of men.
Well, right. And mm-hmm. here the point is, you know, Yahweh begs us, in verse 6, Yahweh begs us to fast from wickedness and to stop oppressing our brethren.
Mm-hmm.
That an acceptable day to Yahweh is a day where we, and we'll see this in verses 6 and 7, where we provide and look out for our kin.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an allusion to thine own flesh in 7, which you're about to read, can only mean our own brethren.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the keeping of calendar days, which is as important as it is the keeping of our race.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes our Sabbaths and our fasts acceptable to him.
Okay, very good. Verse 6 then. Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to do the heavy burdens, and to
undo the heavy burdens?
Yeah, it should be undo, yes, yeah. But it says do here in the King James, to undo the heavy burdens.
In my King James, it's undo, I swear.
Really?
Yours must have a misprint.
Okay.
Unless I copied this from the I'm going to go look at it right now to make sure, but
yes.
I copied my word into my word processor.
Yeah. Only undo
I'm
makes
sure
sense
from there. From the King James Version.
Yes.
And
let me read from the top as you're looking for that. Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens? That's the only thing that fits
well,
the
well,
context.
It's undo in this version of the King James.
Really? Okay. So this is probably a typo in my version then. And to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Yeah, because to do the heavy burdens doesn't fit this context at all.
Well, right. Yahweh is asking us to stop oppressing our brethren.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Verse 7, is it not to deal your bread to the hungry and that you bring the poor that are cast out to your house, when you see the naked that you cover him, and that you hide not yourself from your own flesh.
From your own flesh, meaning your brother's nakedness.
Yeah.
If you cover your brother's nakedness, if you feed your brother, if you bring the poor of your kin into your house, then your fast and your Sabbaths will be acceptable to God.
Yes, and there should be a cross reference here to Matthew chapter 25, beginning with verses 31, where he talks about separating the sheep from the goats, and that the sheep should treat each other well with mercy, kindness, and and
well,
healing.
Right, and that's a good illustration. Build the hospitals, visit the sick, take care of the widows and
mm-hmm.
orphans, and all those things. But if you're not doing those things, your fasts and your Sabbaths aren't going to be acceptable to God.
Right. Yes. Very good. Now, verse 8: Then shall your light break forth as the morning, and your health shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you, and the glory of Yahweh shall be your rearward or rear guard. Okay.
Take care of your brother, and you'll be taken care of.
Right. Right. brotherly love is the key here. Verse 9, then shall you call, and Yahweh shall answer. You shall cry, and he shall say, here I am. If you take away from the midst of you the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity, that is, if we treat each other like brethren, without anger and contempt toward one another, which we still have a lot of today, and of course, even in the Judeo-Christian churches, it's more feigned brotherly love, right? Okay, and there's really not a whole lot of true, sincere brotherly love going on in any of these churches. Verse 10.
Well, right. Well, what they do is they go to church to first to find business deals.
Right.
Okay, they go
with
to church.
Pastor.
And, well, with the other church members, hey, we're in the same church. Why don't you let me side your house, or why don't you let me do this or that? And second, they go to church to show how blessed they are
mm-hmm.
to everybody else.
Right.
It's a show off. I'm going to dress nicer. I'm going to have a bigger car in a lot. My kids are going to look better and be dressed nicer. My wife's going to have more jewelry. That's
right.
Why they go to church.
Exactly. Isn't that the problem that Paul had with the Corinthians?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, verse 10. And if you draw out your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall your light rise in obscurity, and out of obscurity, and your darkness be as the noonday. Verse 11.
In other words, we'll be light in darkness doing these things.
Yes, yes. This is how we built civilization, too. Verse 11. And Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. Again, all of this is what? By obeying his law. Plenty. Food. Fat. No famine. Everything that we could ever dream of will be given to us if we do his will. Verse 12. And they that shall be of you shall build the old waste places, and this is what our people have done. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. Certainly the Jews haven't done any of this. And you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the path to dwell in.
We can only succeed following the ways of Yahweh.
That's
and when
right.
we do that, we do succeed, whether we realize it or not.
Right, yeah. And when we accidentally, follow his ways, even by our genetic code, when there's no Jews around to lead us astray, then our people flourish. Verse 13.
What did von Humboldt say?
Humboldt?
Yeah, Alexander von Humboldt.
Oh, okay.
That America's greatness is in her churches.
Right. Yeah, it was.
It was in the 19th century.
Yeah,
right.
Before the churches became hotbeds of antinomianism and voodoo. Right. Verse 13, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the Holy One of Yahweh honorable, and shall honor him, and your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in Yahweh, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Now what? The heritage of Jacob our father. Okay, that's what we're talking about. It can't be, if we go seeking after somebody else's heritage, we'll never get there, okay? Okay, guest 17 says something about, the Bible says, in Isha, my name, well, Isha is, that's a different word. That's just used very rarely. Isha is used very rarely.
Well, 17 is upset we're using the Tetragrammaton as the name of Yahweh.
Oh, okay. Why?
And he can't get out. He's a Lord-only person, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I guess to him the Bible means the King James.
Okay.
So, I guess he's left the chat. He was upset.
Okay, yeah. But even all the Bible scholars who talk about the Tetragrammaton admit that the word Lord is a substitute for Yahweh. I mean, that's just common knowledge, yeah.
Well, it's clear in the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Greek scrolls that wherever it says Kyrios in the Greek scrolls that we have now and the Dead Sea Scrolls, they used the Tetragrammaton.
Right.
And it's clearly Yahweh. And there's a paper on my website, on Clifton's website, which Clifton wrote, which is it, Lord or Yahweh, that proves that Yahweh was the name of God before the Pharisees and the scribes got a hold of it, and before the Pharisees commanded the people that they couldn't use the name anymore.
Right, exactly.
And that happened in the first century B.C.
Okay, very good. Chapter 59, verse 1. Behold, Yahweh.
Well, I was distracted. I would like to say a couple of things about about the end of 58. Yeah, you know, the end of 58, he says, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day.
Right, right.
In other words, our own pleasure on a day that's supposed to be devoted to him. Okay? And he says, nor finding thine own pleasure on the Sabbath day, and that's, yeah, you know, these people that they go to church Sunday morning, spend the rest of the day watching football and drinking beer.
Yes.
And they're not keeping the Sabbath. That's a pretty artificial way to keep the Sabbath.
Right.
He's saying, don't do your pleasure on my Sabbath day.
Exactly.
And I don't think that football and beer and are part of the recipe for a true Sabbath.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. And a lot of those people do a lot of drinking out at the ballpark.
But well, the football is basically idol worship.
Yes.
And the beer is just I mean, there's nothing wrong with a beer, but the drinking all day is just as bad.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Okay.
And that's not helping your brethren, football and beer. Right. Watching
just keeping them off
Beast of the Field getting paid $40 million a year running around the field with a ball.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and stuffing a basketball. You don't even have to jump, right?
And they're literally beasts of the field, right? Beasts
right.
of the football field.
That's right. There you go. Okay, chapter 59, verse 1. Behold, Yahweh's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated between you and your Elohim, and your sins have hidden his face from you that he will not hear. Okay, remember, folks? Yahweh does not hear the prayer of a sinner. So, go ahead.
Right. Here it's spelled out what separated the children of Israel from Yahweh, that they were alienated from him. This is the alienation spelled out.
Yes.
Your sin, your iniquity, and there's no sin without the law.
Right.
So nobody was ever alienated from God except the children of Israel.
Right.
And nobody can be reconciled to him through Christ except the children of Israel.
No other people took that oath at Mount Sinai. That's the bottom line. No one else took that oath. Only the Israelites took that oath. Of course, they broke it. Verse 3, for your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness. And, of course, all this is going on again today. Verse 4, none call for justice. nor any plead for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. And the churches are the worst offenders.
Well, today they are. That's
yes,
sure.
They are. They're turning a blind eye to all of the injustices going on around the world committed by the Zionists.
And cramming homosexual marriage down people's throats.
That's right. That's right. The churches are full of iniquity. Verse 5, they hatch cockatrice's eggs and weave the spider's web. He that eats of their eggs dies, and that which is crushed breaks out into a viper.
The inevitable results of race mixing.
Yes. Yes, and the vipers eat our substance. Verse 6.
Well, I think you've said that when we sin, Jews happen, right?
Yes, right. Exactly. Verse 6. Their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hand. Boy, this is describing our government so perfectly. Verse 7. And our churches. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Oh, man, all these phony wars that we're in. Their thoughts are the thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. This is fire and brimstone, folks.
Well, we find the same language, and Paul's quoting from Psalm 13:2 in the Septuagint, all right, which would be Psalm 14:2 in the King James, but the lines are missing from the Masoretic text.
Hmm.
They would follow 14:2 in the King James. And I'm talking about Romans 3:10-18.
Okay.
And Romans 3:10-18 has many statements that are exactly like this of the unrighteous people of Paul's own time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Okay. Very good. Where do we leave off? Verse 7
verse
or 8?
8.
Verse 8. The way of peace they know not. There is no judgment in their goings, so proper judgment, righteous judgment. They have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace. And we're not knowing any peace today, folks. Therefore is judgment far from us, neither does, again, this is, what's the
word? Well, people have departed from God. They've turned to humanism, which I believe is the image of the beast. And they have, but we have no justice in the world anymore because of that.
Yeah, and justice would be a much better word here than judgment. Therefore is justice far from us, neither does justice overtake us. Are these two different words here, Bill? Justice and judgment in verse 9?
Let me look at the...
We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. We're all waiting for the great leader, right? Ron Paul.
It is a different word.
Okay.
It's in the word for judgment is mishpat. Judgment, mm-hmm. but it can also mean justice.
Yes.
It's really like a synonym.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And translators, even myself, when you see two different words, even though they're synonyms, you try to draw a distinction of them in the text. But
so
judgment could very well be justice.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Verse 10, we grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope. Whether you're a liberal or conservative, folks, you're groping like the blind. And we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night.
Let me say the healing of the blind in the New Testament by Christ was symbolic of curing our metaphoric blindness.
Right.
And when we really examine the words of Christ, we aren't groping the wall like the blind anymore.
Yeah.
We see exactly what's going on in the world today
when
we examine and believe the words of Christ. It's very easy to see who the wicked are, where they came from, and what and why this is happening to us.
Yeah, what they're up to. It's very clear what they're doing. But the Judeo-Christian can't see it, just can't see it.
Well, no, because they're worshiping the Jew.
That's right. That's right. We are in desolate places as dead men. Verse 11, we roar all like bears and mourn sore like doves. We look for judgment, but there is none, for salvation, but it is far from us. Verse 12 sums it up. For our transgressions are multiplied before you, and our sins testify against us. for our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we know them. Yes, we do know them, but people tend to ignore their own transgressions, and then they point the finger at everybody else. Verse 13, in transgressing and lying against Yahweh and in parting away from our Elohim, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood. Boy, this applies to today, magnificently. Verse 14, and judgment is turned away backward, and justice stands afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. You certainly won't find truth on the airwaves, folks, or in the newspapers. Verse 15, yea, truth fails, and he that departs from evil makes himself a prey.
The good are always victimized by the wicked.
Right.
But let me say, the Septuagint says here, and truth has been taken away,
mm-hmm.
and they have turned aside their mind from understanding. It's
mm-hmm.
a very different reading.
Okay, yeah, that's very different. Either way, it's good. And Yahweh saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. It's, of course, we're talking about righteous judgment here. Verse 16, and he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore, his arm brought salvation to him, and his righteousness, it sustained him. Again, here we're promising our Redeemer. Verse 17, for he put on righteousness as a breastplate and a helmet of salvation upon his head, and he put on the garments of vengeance for clothing. Of course, now there are two comings, right? One for forgiveness, another for vengeance, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. According to their deeds, accordingly, he will repay.
Now, this is where I think that that Paul got the full armor of Yahweh discourse.
Okay.
Yeah, put on the full armor of Yahweh, for you will be able to stand against the methods of
right.
the false accuser.
Yes.
And he says, put on the girding your loins with the truth,
mm-hmm.
and putting on the breastplate of justice and binding the feet in preparation of the good message of peace, and taking up the shield of the faith. I believe Paul gets the metaphor from here.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. What passages are those?
It's Ephesians. Chapter 6, verses 10 to 20. It's in there.
Ephesians 6, I'll put that note right here. Good cross-reference. Verse 18, according to their deeds, accordingly he will repay fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies, to the islands. He will repay recompense. And again, the coastlands or the outposts of Israel. Okay. Verse 19. So shall they fear the name of Yahweh from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun, when the enemy shall come in like a flood. Book of Revelation has this verse language too. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the spirit of Yahweh shall lift up a standard against him.
Well, this is actually... Yeah, reminiscent, and I understand that the flood, the serpent let out a flood
out
from
his mouth right.
after the woman when she fled to the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that flood was the Arabs, the Turks, the Mongols.
Right.
But however, this is, and Yahweh defended the core of Israel from that. I mean, the revelation said that a third of the men would die,
mm-hmm.
and basically a third of our race was wiped out.
Yeah.
With the Arabs, the Turks, and the Mongols. There's no
right.
doubt. However, this is a different flood, I think. This is the flood of Ezekiel 38.
Okay.
And this is the flood that we're undergoing now.
Okay. The end times flood. Okay.
Yes.
The spirit of Yahweh shall lift up a standard against him, the better. Verse 20, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and to them that turn from transgression in Jacob. Let me repeat this one, folks. And the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and to them that turn from transgression in Jacob.
Well, that's why I say we can't fight our way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
We can't vote our way out of it. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, because...
We can only repent our way out of this.
That's right.
When we seek again to become a just and faithful people, that then the other races will become diminished before us.
Yes. We will flourish, and they will be.
We can't continue to screw our brother and rent porno flicks every Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
and drink and and pursue the joys of the flesh or the poisons of the flesh, whichever way you want to look at it, and be a just and righteous people.
That's right.
It doesn't work. The two ideas don't go together.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can't be a crackhead and be a righteous man.
Yeah.
You can't be a television addict even, or a porno addict and be a righteous man. The two don't go together.
Yes, very good. Verse 21, as for me, this is my covenant with them. Of course, we're only talking here. He just said Jacob, right? With these Jacob Israelites, says Yahweh.
Well, it doesn't change. Nobody else here can possibly be the subject of the covenant.
Right, right. And nobody else, by redeeming themselves or by repenting, can make the world a better place. My spirit that is upon you and my words which I have put in your mouth shall not depart out of your mouth, nor out of the mouth of your seed, your descendants, nor out of the mouth of your descendants' descendants, says Yahweh, from hereafter and forever.
And this last verse again proves that these promises are genetic.
That's right.
Now, if these promises were not genetic,
mm-hmm.
and if each generation randomly took their choice of religion,
mm-hmm.
and there were good and bad people amongst all races in every generation,
right?
We would have no Jews left, would we?
Right. But they're not capable of repenting because don't believe they need to.
Their evil is genetic.
That's right.
And that's why from generation to generation they are antichrist.
That's right.
And our goodness is genetic unless we are led away by them.
That's right.
Because they are the panderers. They are the pornographers. They are the drug manufacturers.
That's right. Just as Eve was deceived and led astray by Nahash, our people are still being deceived and led astray by the international Jew. Folks,
again and again, and more than at any time this very day.
That's right. That's right. Because if Eve was blind and uncomprehending what was happening to her, our people today are 100 times more blind and uncomprehending. Chapter 60, verse 1. Arise, shine. Do we hear reveille? Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But Yahweh shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you. Folks, it's going to be seen in us and on us. Verse 3, and the nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes round about and see all they gather themselves together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side.
I got a couple of things to say. First,
okay.
You kind of got ahead of me. In verse 2,
mm-hmm.
Yahweh shall rise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee.
Mm-hmm.
This here, and this happens often in Scripture, Yahweh is comparing himself to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
He's making the sun a metaphor for himself.
Sure.
And this takes advantage of the ancient sun god religions.
Mm-hmm.
Which really may have in effect been perversions of the true knowledge of the light of the world in the first place.
Right. Right.
However, the emperors of Egypt and Babylon and
mm-hmm.
Rome, the first they very often thought that they were the light of the world.
Right. Right.
And that's why the king of Babylon is in the Bible called Lucifer or
mm-hmm.
the light bearer.
Right.
Even here in Isaiah chapter 14, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they also all worship the sun.
Right, right.
And it's probably not coincidental that pagans made December 25th, which was the
right.
birthday of the Roman sun god,
right.
to be the birthday of Christ.
Yes.
But
yes.
that's if you appreciate
right.
all of these,
mm-hmm.
you know, the ancient pagan religions can make you appreciate Scripture even more.
Right. Well, yeah.
Because
it's
Yahweh's basically saying, I'm the real sun.
Mm-hmm,
I'm
mm-hmm.
the real light of the
yeah.
world.
Right. Well, certainly this metaphorical language is valid. And the various kings and queens of history, including the Egyptian kings and queens, perverted this metaphor and called themselves the sun. Okay? And that's how this paganization of this metaphoric language began. Right.
Well, right. That's what I believe.
Yes. Very good. Verse 3, and the nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising.
A shining city on a hill cannot be hid, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Lift up your eyes round about. except for Las Vegas.
Which should
the
be
lights
it,
are
yes.
getting ready to go out on Las Vegas, folks. Lift up your eyes round about and see all they gather themselves together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side, which is kind of like what's happening with the Christian identity movement today.
This is all strong covenant language.
Yes, covenant, yes. Verse 5, then you shall see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted to you. The forces of the nations shall come to you.
That word forces is the wealth of the nations.
Wealth of nations, okay. And, of course, it has always come to the white race of Christian Israel whenever we have obeyed his law. That's prosperity. That's when we have prosperity. And when we treat each other fairly and honestly as kinsmen should, that's when our civilizations flourish.
We were told that if we'd obey his law, we would inherit the nations. I mean,
right.
We have the Genesis 10 nations in the context when
right.
the words were spoken.
Yes.
But we will inherit the earth when
mm-hmm.
we are obedient. That's
right.
absolutely true.
Right. Verse 6, the multitude of camels shall cover you, the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, all they that from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh. Now, when America was obeying his law, and, of course, the Constitution of the United States is the obedience of his law. I don't let anybody fool you on that score. The U.S. Constitution is based on biblical law. There's simply no doubt about this. And of course, it's the U.S. Constitution is merely a charter granted to the federal government given by the Christian states, okay? All these Christian states state very clearly in their constitutions that they are Christian states, and the federal government has no right to overturn that fact, okay? And just because Jews have gotten a hold of our Constitution and twisted and distorted it doesn't make the Constitution an anti-Christian document, okay? But throughout our history, from the beginning, when the Constitution was put into effect and it stabilized the economy of the 13 colonies, 13 states at that time, all of the wealth of the world began to flow to America. That's exactly what happened, in spite of the tariffs. Okay? the federal government made its money through tariffs. And that was the
only form
of tax.
Right. The only constitutional way for the government to make money
mm-hmm.
was through tariffs.
Right, right.
They
and
were
all
supposed
that
to provide for the common defense and for the administration of the union through tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Tariffs were the only source of revenue for the federal government probably until... well, let's see, 1913, okay?
The federal government was supposed to be the government of the union,
mm-hmm.
not the government of
the people,
right. per se.
Right.
The governments of the people were the state governments.
Right.
The states were supposed to have full sovereignty over their citizens.
That's right. That's right.
And we should have been citizens of the state in which we
mm-hmm.
were born in
yes.
or resided in, not citizens of the federal government.
Right, right.
It's all been perverted.
It has, absolutely. Absolutely has been perverted. Okay, verse 7, all the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together to you. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister to you. They shall come up with acceptance on my altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory, because if we obey his laws, prosperity will come, folks.
Well, right. And I have to qualify this statement here
okay.
because it's very easy for people to confuse these statements. All right?
Okay.
It doesn't say that the Arabs of the Nabataeans and the people of Kedar,
mm-hmm.
who are Arabs and very often
right.
Edomites, and the Midianites, they're not going to be accepted at his altar.
It's their produce. Yeah.
It's their produce.
Right.
It's their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
It's their gold, their incense that Israel is going to possess.
Yes. Right.
And the wealth of those nations belonging to Israel will be acceptable on his
mm-hmm.
altar.
Yes, very good. Yes. Verse 8, who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me. And again, these far off places where Israel dwells. Israel is a people, folks. Israel is not a place. Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring your sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, to the name of Yahweh your Elohim, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you. And the sons and strangers shall build up your walls, and their kings shall minister to you, for in my wrath I smote you, but in my favor have I had mercy. Okay. Verse 11, therefore your gates shall be open continually, they shall not be shut day nor night, that's true of New York City, that men may bring to you the forces of the nations.
This is wealth again, the word means wealth.
And that their kings may be brought. Of course, then their kings would want to make deals, treaties with America. And there was a time when America was the leading nation on the planet. Okay?
But now that we've become an empire, our presidents usually go around whoring themselves to all the other nations.
That's right. The empire of whores. Yes. Very good. Verse 12, for the nation and kingdom that will not serve you shall perish. Oh, man. The Zionist empire is going to perish, folks. Yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. Okay, we're seeing apparently there's a troublemaker in the chat room. Okay. Let's see if my, there we go. I hope I got the right guy. For the nation and kingdom that will not serve you shall perish. Yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. The glory of Lebanon shall come to you, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together, to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. The sons also of them that afflicted you shall come bending to you, and all they that despised you shall bow themselves down at the soles of your feet, and they shall call you the city of Yahweh, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. Okay, so is there any doubt that Israel is going to rule the world through Yahshua? Is there any doubt?
Well, this had a short-term fulfillment.
Yes.
Assyria, Persian, Babylonian, Media, they were all later subject to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They were subject to the Romans and the Parthians.
Yes.
When Christ walked the earth, few people understand this, when Christ walked the earth, the known world was divided into three portions. The Parthian, east of the Euphrates, the Roman, west of the Euphrates, and the Scythian, north of the Danube.
Okay.
They were all Israel.
Right.
Israel dominated the entire world in the first century when Christ walked the earth.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the Romans were primarily Zerah Judah, the Parthians were Phares Judah, and the Scythians were the 10 northern tribes. Okay? Very good. Okay, verse 15. Whereas you have been forsaken and hated, so that no man went through you, I will make you an eternal excellency, a joy of many generations. This sounds like Revelation chapter 21, where the glory of Israel is portrayed. Verse 16, you shall also suck the milk of the nations, and shall suck the breast of the kings, and you shall know that I, Yahweh, am your Savior and your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. Now, of course, this sounds sounds supremacist, right?
Absolutely, and it is. And he's not the Savior and Redeemer of anybody else.
Right, right.
That's just the way it is. It's not really white supremacy. It's God supremacy.
That's right, through us, exactly. Because he created us with the intention that we should establish his law.
Well, it's going to happen whether we like it or not.
Right, right.
And whether the other races like it or not.
Right, and those of our people who don't want to follow the law will fall by the wayside. And the remnant will rule with him. That's clearly what the promise is here, folks. So let's get with it. Verse 17, for brass I will bring gold, and for iron I will bring silver, and for wood brass, and for stones iron. I will also make your officers peace and your extractors righteousness.
Extractors, right.
Exactly.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I guess that's the same as extractors. the people extracting from you.
Yes, right. Verse 18. It is exactors. Sorry, folks. Verse 18. Violence shall no more be heard in your land. wasting no destruction inside your borders, but you shall call your walls salvation and your gates praise. Now,
well, that sounds like the city of Yahweh in Revelation.
Right, right. And this is not talking about personal salvation, folks. This is talking about the salvation of our race, our people, our DNA, our genome. That's what this is talking about here. It's physical salvation we're talking about here, not spiritual salvation. Of course, that's part of it. But physical salvation without, you know, spiritual salvation without physical salvation is nonsense. Got to be both. It's got to be both physical and spiritual for us. Verse 19, the sun shall be no more your light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give light to you, but Yahweh shall be to you an everlasting light, and your Elohim your glory. Your sun shall no more go down, neither shall your moon withdraw itself, for Yahweh shall be your everlasting light, and the days of your mourning shall be ended. Wow, these are just glorious verses here. You know, these are promises that Yahweh will keep for us, folks. He will absolutely keep these promises for us. Verse 21, your people also shall be all righteous. They shall inherit the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. A little one shall become a thousand, a small one, a strong nation. This is not talking about individuals. We're talking about nations here, folks. I, Yahweh, will hasten it in his time. Okay?
Now, the incredible hypocrisy in our day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If we said that this meant white people, we'd be accused of being supremacists.
That's right.
If we said that this meant Jews, we'd be told, oh, because they're God's chosen people.
Yeah, right. Then everybody would love us.
Well, that's absolutely hypocritical.
Of course it is.
How come it's not supremacy if it means the Jews?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody knows they're God's chosen people.
I can't fathom a greater hypocrisy.
Yes. Yeah. And they haven't accomplished any of these things that Yahweh says Israel would do.
And if you brought this to every single Judeo-Christian in this country, they would respond in that manner.
That's right.
If you said this means white people, they'd say you're a supremacist.
Right.
If you said this means Jews, they'd say, oh, yeah, well, they're God's people. They deserve it.
Right, right. Yeah. Let's kill more Palestinians, Afghanis, and Iraqis. And let's kill white people in the process, too, right? It's okay, because of the Jews. It's good for the Jews, right?
Well, that's the point. That's the extent to which these people are worshiping the beast.
That's right. That's right.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. It's unbelievable, actually, but it is. Unfortunately, it is. Chapter 61, verse 1, the Spirit of Yahweh Elohim is upon me because Yahweh has anointed me to preach good tidings to the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. Of course, this is the verse that Yahshua quoted in the synagogue of Capernaum, right?
Well, right, and you have to read the first part of verse 2 to proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh.
Yes.
And up to that point,
mm-hmm.
verses 1 and 2 are quoted by Christ,
yes.
and that's recorded at Luke 4:18-19.
Right.
And the rest of verse 2 was not quoted,
mm-hmm.
the day of vengeance of our God.
Right.
Because it wasn't time yet.
Yes.
And Christ purposely left that off.
Mm-hmm.
He did not declare the day of vengeance. But rather, he refused to divulge it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now, also in Luke 4, right where this text is separated by the verse divisions here, Luke has a line. He read a line from Isaiah 58:6,
okay.
where it says, to set the bruised free.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no doubt that Luke took, all of this is being read directly from the Septuagint. It's actually
yes.
verbatim.
Yes.
And that Christ uttered these words in Greek.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. So, and then what happened? it's one of the most profound passages of the New Testament because of the reaction. Now, these are his people. These aren't Jews. These are Benjaminites in Capernaum, okay, where he's reading these words. And he quoted these passages, and he closed the book. And he just stood there silent for a while, and all the people in the synagogue started to look at each other. Is this guy saying he's the Messiah? How dare he say he's the Messiah? And they tried to throw him off the cliff. His own people.
Absolutely. And that's what he was doing. He was saying, I am the Messiah.
That's right. Yeah.
There is no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is the reaction he got from his own people. He'd probably get the same reaction today, probably even worse, because the Judeo-Christians will not be willing to hear his separatist message.
Okay? Well, they're going to hate him for getting rid of God's people.
Yeah, right. For the chosen, the self-chosen, exactly. So let me read verses 1 and 2 together. The Spirit of Yahweh Elohim is upon me because Yahweh has anointed me to preach good tidings to the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. Folks, these are the things that Yahshua Messiah did. Verse 2, to proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh and the day of vengeance, which is yet to come. It's very close, folks. And the day of vengeance of our Elohim to comfort all that mourn. Justice. When Yahweh visits this time, justice for on his scale will occur, and our enemies will be taken care of. Verse 3. To appoint to them that mourn in Zion, to give to them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness. Trees are people, folks. The planting of Yahweh, that he might be glorified. Verse 4. And they shall build the old wastes, they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of many generations. And I believe, again, this is all talking about after the day of vengeance, verse 5.
I'd like to say that verses 1 through, verses 3 and 4 very much sound like Revelation 21, 4 and 22, 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
First in verse 3 we have that there'll be no more mourning. Yet, the oil of joy for mourning, mourning will be replaced by joy. Mm-hmm. And that's Revelation 21:4, and Yahweh shall wipe all tears from their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying,
right,
nor any more pain. And where it says that there'll be trees, they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of Yahweh, that he might be glorified. And that's always important. But Revelations 22, 1 to 2, and he showed me a pure river of the water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it and on either side of the river was there the tree of life,
mm-hmm,
which bears 12 manner of fruits.
Right.
And that's one for each tribe.
Right.
Yeah, and it yields her fruit every month. But there just happened to be 12 tribes of Israel.
That's right. And strangers shall stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of the alien shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers.
Now let me say that strangers, in chapter 60 where it says strangers shall build thy walls,
mm-hmm,
all right, that word was nekar, okay?
Okay.
And that to me intones more of an alien.
Okay.
And here the word is zur. And Zor always means a guest. It's the equivalent of a guest friend.
Okay.
In Greek, a Zor is a stranger that has certain rights and privileges,
mm-hmm,
which is the way the Greeks use the word xenos.
Okay.
Which is guest friend is the best translation of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. So there were formal rules by which Zor and Nekar were differentiated, okay?
Well, right, and several others, but Azur stranger is a stranger. It's another Adamite that has the rights and privileges of hospitality,
okay,
the expectation of hospitality.
I see. Okay.
In your nation.
Very good, very good. Okay, verse 6, but you shall be named the priests of Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our God, or Elohim. You shall eat the riches of the nations, and in their glory shall you boast yourselves.
And okay? Peter called the recipients of his epistles a nation of kings and priests. A nation, an ethnicity of kings
right.
and priests.
A race.
Right.
A race of kings and priests. Yes. Very good. Verse 7. For your shame you shall have double, and for confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land they shall possess the double everlasting joy shall be to them. Okay,
and that's the promise to Israel after Babylon falls, that we will punish her double.
Yes, yes. Okay, verse 8.
I don't know how we could take double of everything from her.
Well, you know, actually considering how much of the ecology is being destroyed right now, you know, when everything is restored, it'll be double, certainly be more than double than what we have now. Verse 8, for I, Yahweh, love judgment, and I hate robbery for burnt offering. And I will direct their work in truth, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them. Boy, the covenant theology in Isaiah is just fantastic. Verse 9, and their seed, that is their offspring, shall be known among the nations, and their offspring among the people. All that see them shall acknowledge them, that they are the people which Yahweh has blessed.
And the short-term, you know, meaning of this is that it's talking about the children of the people of the captivity of the Assyrians,
Short-term.
Who were among the nations of the Persians and Medes and Assyrians and Babylonians. Yeah, you know, those nations, those are the nations that will recognize these people as the people Yahweh.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, as we've been finding, many of these verses do have that short-term fulfillment based on the aftermath of the Assyrian captivity, okay?
Well, they all have that,
yes,
and,
yes.
And many of them have the long-term fulfillment.
Right. And
the long-term expectation.
Yes, and the day of vengeance fulfillment as well, okay, on the planetary scale. Verse 10. I will greatly rejoice in Yahweh. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness as a bridegroom decks himself with ornaments. And we're talking about the people of Israel. This is not an individual message. It's both individual and national.
Well, right, but the bride is the nation,
right.
And the marriage relationship
exactly.
Between Israel and Yahweh.
The bride can't be an individual Israelite. And as a bride adorns herself, and that's true in the book of Revelation as well, I mean, the similarities are tremendous here. And as a bride adorns herself with jewels, for as the earth brings forth her bud, and as the garden causes things that are sown in it to spring forth, so Yahweh our Elohim will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nations. Okay.
Well, someone, he goes by like Little Kanga or something like that in the Christogenia Forum.
Okay.
He made an excellent post
okay.
that was very tongue-in-cheek, and not everybody picked up on it right away.
Okay.
But he said that if Satan, you know, if the church believes that, you know, Satan is a walking, talking,
yeah.
singular person,
right?
Then who is the bride?
Yeah, right.
You know, the bride has to be one woman.
You
know, if Satan is one man, or one being, then the bride, that and he did it very well, and the bride has to be one woman who's hidden somewhere on the planet. We have to identify the bride.
Right.
You know? It was pretty good, and it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
If the bride is not a single person, then neither is Satan.
Right.
And that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah, well, the Satan has children who walk around in shoe leather.
Well, of course,
just
like
the
bride is the church, right? The assembly.
Right.
The bride is the assembly of the Christian people.
Yes, yeah, the congregation, and not the church as in Catholic Church, the you know, hierarchy of clerics who call themselves priests. They're not real priests of Yahweh. They're totally, in fact, those people are divorced from the congregation. They have no business telling the congregation what to do or what to believe, but that's what's been happening ever since the Catholic Church, you know, laid down its new rules of the Bible, okay, reinterpreting. So basically what we have is the Catholic Church reinstituting a Pharisaism, a Catholic form of it, okay.
Well, that was done from the beginning, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was done when they developed the sacraments.
Yes. No,
they developed the sacraments so that they could keep their priesthood and reinstitute Phariseeism and control of the people, which is the same thing that the Pharisees we're excoriated for by Christ again and again.
Yes, yeah, by establishing dead rituals and making those rituals more important than obedience to the law and brother love. The Pharisees were doing exactly the same thing. And prancing around in colorful robes, right?
and I believe that they are the Nicolaitans, or the people conquerors.
Yes, yes. And proselytizing non-Israelites. The
right.
Pharisees were doing that too.
Right, to widen their tents.
Exactly. Exactly.
More income, more tithes.
Yes, yes. Okay, so yeah, the parallels between the Pharisees and the Catholic Church are numerous indeed, numerous indeed. Okay, so we've got, four more chapters to go, or four or five here, and we'll be taking our time with us. If we come to the end of, Isaiah next week,
I'm sure we will next week.
Yeah.
I was just trying, ask you not to get too far tonight, or else we won't have enough next week.
Yeah. But if we do have some time, or maybe even the interim show between Isaiah and Jeremiah, I do want to, because Jeremiah talks, and so does Ezekiel, talk about America in many, many passages. And I kind of glossed over Isaiah chapter 18, which does contain verses which I believe refer to America. And so, you know, at some point, I'd like to address that because I overlooked it when we were in chapter 18 earlier, okay?
Well, I believe that there are biblical verses that point to this nation as the final destination for his people. I don't believe Isaiah 18 is one of them.
Okay, yeah, well, we'll see. I think there are several authors. I think Raymond Capp is one of them.
Oh, I know what they say.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, but it's a very interesting subject. So that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow I'll be on with Sword Brethren at 5 Eastern, and I will be around for tomorrow's show on Yahweh's Covenant People. And Sunday, my guest is going to be John Kaminsky. That should be a great interview. Okay? In the meantime, Yahweh bless.
I have one announcement. Yeah. I have the Christogenia.net chat server. It is moved. It's been moved physically to a new server, and hopefully it will be more reliable. I mean, my hosting company indicated that they had a problem with the machine it was on.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I haven't had a lot of reliability, and they moved it today.
Uh-huh.
And it's up and running, and everything's restored.
Right. Very good. Very good. Okay. Things should be getting smoother for. We haven't really had a lot of lurkers in the chat rooms lately, which is a very good sign. Apparently one tonight, but we haven't had many at all lately, only a few in the last few months. So those people are starting to leave us alone. That's a good sign. Okay. Thank you all for listening, and praise Yahweh. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.